All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. On the line is Sandy Williams. Always good to have him on board. You know, Sandy, I was reading over the weekend about the position that China is in, and they tried to create, it haven't tried, but I think they were kind of pushed into a partnership kind of with China, I mean with Russia. And before this war broke out, because of the way our government was trying to muscle them, that they chose to create some kind of relationship with Russia and Vladimir Putin. And that was starting to build as both sides, Russia and China, were kind of coming together and saying, well, we'll deal with America collectively. Individually, we have trouble with them, but collectively, we create a powerful force that America will have to listen to. And so they were creating that kind of friendship. And, you know, here we go, the onset of Ukraine and what's going on, and China's stuck right in the middle. With when you look at what is happening with our investments in China, and our economies are intertwined, Sandy, is it safe to say that? China's economy and ours?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, more and more. You know, Trump has tried to start a process of disentwining them. And it's probably true that we're becoming more entwined with some other economies as well as China, but we aren't becoming self-sufficient. And we definitely are highly reliant on China in so many ways for our parts and products.
So that being the case, what does China do when Russia, their new friend and ally, I don't know if they're allies, but they're certainly, they were starting to build a relationship. Now Russia feels strongly enough in their relationship that they call them and say, hey, we need some help financially and we need some help militarily. And then the United States says, hey, don't you do that, China. You know, there's going to be a price that you're going to pay. And China's stuck in the middle of that. What do they do, Sandy?
Well, interestingly, the United States probably has been a prime mover in the organization of the coalition that has been standing up and sort of started the process, the wheels rolling towards maybe the tension in Ukraine by this whole NATO flirtation, and now the invasion of Ukraine and the defense of it. The United States set up a very strong coalition, which is all about economic sanctions and what have you. But as this war goes on, the United States is beginning to find itself between a rock and a hard spot, because we're beginning to develop this feeling for David as it fights Goliath. And there's a national political movement that's and an attack on Biden. You know, the Republicans who want to figure out any way they can to attack Biden are saying, well, we ought to be sending planes and we ought to be doing much more, taking a much more active role here, which is just what Russia is asking China to do. And it's just what neither country wants to do. China doesn't want to do it because they don't want to get crosswise with this big coalition. I mean, I'm sure what Biden is talking to China about isn't just what the United States would do to China. He's trying to imply that all of the coalition that is involved with the sanctions against Russia would try and turn and do this to China. And China doesn't know the extent to which that would happen. That would be a disaster for China. We understand that we don't want to get into an actual hot war with Russia. It's the last thing that we're prepared to do over Ukraine. And yet we sort of set the stage for it for the last 10 years with the process that we've had in terms of dealing with the Ukrainian government and the changes in the Ukrainian administration. So, you know, we're between a rock and a hard spot. We're trying to put China between a rock and a hard spot. We put ourselves there. We're trying to put China there. And I think that the power of those two countries being between a rock and a hard spot will cause the Ukrainian war to get settled, because Russia will care about China's inability to help them. They are, in a way, very, very, very needy of some help from a third party. And Ukraine and will have to listen to us in terms of our willingness to move forward to the next level of support for Ukraine. And Biden feels some urgency about it, because nationally we need a settlement of Ukraine before the political pressure in the United States becomes so powerful that it has a huge impact domestically on politics, because we didn't follow through with creating a hot war situation in Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, with all of this going on internationally, local politics, they just disappear. They can't even show up on the radar screen because of what continues to happen, internationally. And you know, I'll say this, and then we can move on from there. I think the more people have watched these images, we talked about this before, it certainly, you know, breaks the hearts of many people in this country, and it continues to consume. You know, I get around people and I hear them talking about the images. But I read an article over the weekend that talked about if they would have shown the images of what we did in Iraq, these images pale in comparison to the images of what we did in Iraq. And if you say this to American people, Sandy, for the most part, they don't want to hear that. It's because they'll say, well, the Iraqis deserve that. Well, you know, I have never been able to understand that way of thinking. That we should, and that's probably why Russia and others dismiss us when we point our fingers at what they're doing. They know what we did, mm-hmm. and they know that our attack on Iraq was unnecessary, unprovoked, and yet here we are, you know, condemning them, as Joe Biden condemned and called Vladimir Putin a war criminal. If you talk to the people in Iraq about what took place in that war with us, they would say that you know, George Bush, Barack Obama, and others were war criminals as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with each countries and the way they inform themselves about what they're doing. We paint ourselves as riding on a white horse wherever we go, and whatever we're doing, we're going there to liberate people. We're going there to spread democracy. You know, the Russians now say they're going to Ukraine to denazify it. There's always and they probably perceive to some extent the actual risk associated with that at some level. But it's all happening for reasons that are more ulterior than that. And everyone should understand that. But once you get into a war, wars have a life of their own. And when we armed and provided the support to Ukraine that we have, we gave them the ability to resist for quite a while. We didn't give them the ability to resist a long, long time. And the problem with resisting for quite a while is that the initial invasion by Russia of Ukraine would not have killed many people if Ukraine had not been armed enough to defend itself and had simply capitulated. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I'm just saying that by arming a people to defend themselves for quite a while, you give them the opportunity to suffer great casualties and great damage, and they might come out of it in the end with the same result. They'll have different feelings about it. The nationalism will have risen to a new level. There will be lots of other reactions from it. But by arming a people to defend themselves for quite a while, but without arming them sufficiently to succeed, what you really have done is taken them from a quick loss to a long and very painful defeat.
You know, Sandy, those words are piercing because on the one hand, you know, you certainly wanted Ukraine to defend itself. You can kind of see where there's a no-win situation for our country and the decisions that have been made. And I don't care what the other side says. I think that the decisions that Joe Biden has made, not because he's a Democrat, were the prudent ones. And, you know, at some point in time, the realization, because I think the realization is now starting to come to Zelensky. He's starting to realize himself, because he's softening somewhat with his stance and the demands, because he knows that the end is near, right? I mean,
well, reality, sure. I mean, there's a reality in this that you can look at, and it's almost mathematical. And so, yes, he understands that resisting forever and ending in a defeat will be a terrible, terribly destructive outcome for people. It might, for the institution of Ukraine nationalism, it might be a good thing, but it's a bad thing for all the suffering and all the people that happens in the interim. And the Russians are looking at it similarly. I mean, embarking on a war that's very costly and results in many deaths and a change in international image is a costly thing. Now, the problem we have with Russia is that we imposed all of those costs on Russia already. So the continuation of the war for Russia, unless there's some promise that the sanctions will be lifted and things will be improved at the end of the war, there's little for Russia to lose or gain by stopping the war if they don't think that what's really hurting them, which is international opinion and sanctions, are going to be lifted. So we're going to have some problems here. You know, we have to decide how we're going to proceed down the road and are we going to try and bring Russia back into the fold, which clearly is something that in the long run, in terms of an intergenerational view forward, looking forward generations, it's clearly something we should be trying to do, but it's not something we seem to be trying to do. And we precipitated the situation in all likelihood because we failed to take into account the absolute national character of Russia, which includes this Eurasian paranoia about Europe and what damage Europe could do to the empire, which has always been Russia's view of itself. And they've always had an empire view. There was an interesting article today about that, just the how Russia has always been an empire that's either inflating or deflating in size.
You know, Sandy, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you, I mean, because we do know that the rebuilding of Ukraine, many of their cities flattened. It's a whole lot more difficult a task that they're going to be left with dealing with than Russia, because Russia is still going to be intact with their cities. They haven't suffered any of those types of things. But the difference in having a city that has to, or a country that has to be completely rebuilt, and a country that is dealing with the aspects that Russia is dealing with the lack of financial support that the people are having. We'll talk a little bit more about that on the other side. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is on the line. We'll be right back.